crimes on race and policing, money for Lot J, the JEA investigation, and more. Lots to discuss this morning. And good morning to you. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri. Get on the line now. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you how the Jaguars are helping you vote early this week with their new drop box for your ballot. But first this hour, the latest on the COVID pandemic. Over the weekend, the U.S. reported its second highest day ever of new COVID-19 cases, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Here in Florida, the State Department of Health Sunday reported 2,385 additional new cases and 12 new deaths. Across the state, the death toll has been quite large, 778,636 people in Florida have died from coronavirus since the pandemic began. And amidst these numbers, this week is a busy one around town and across the state. It's the final week of the presidential race. Florida once again hangs in the balance. The pandemic is the biggest issue, of course, along with health care and some other things driving voters to the polls. Locally, there are a couple of forums coming up looking at issues of race and policing in this city. At the same time, there is growing pressure on city officials to take a close look at Shad Khan's proposed project for Lot J. Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri is on the line with updates on all of these matters and more. Tommy Hazzouri, it's great to have you back on the program. Good morning.
It's great to be back. Thank you. A lot's going on this summer, and doesn't sound like anything stopped yet.
I know, so, right? I want to give the number for people to connect with you as we welcome Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri back on the job after some time off to deal with a health issue. Give us a call. It's 549-2937 as we talk Lot J, Election Week, and more. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Already getting your Facebook comments. We'll get to those in a moment. President Hazzouri, before we get into all the issues on your plate, I want to ask you about how you're doing. You underwent a successful lung transplant in July, took a little time off work. You're back at work now. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for asking, and thank all the people in Jacksonville who sent me cards and letters and emails. I was out a month. I think Vice President Newby took over for two meetings, and I was back. Actually, yesterday was my three-month anniversary for the transplant. So I think the doctor's going to let me get out. But, you know, with the coronavirus, it doubles down on any kind of health situations, and especially your lung. But this lung has been it's been a miracle, and mm-hmm. I'm so blessed to even be here. And so far, so good, and knock on wood. And I think, you know, a new lease on life, and I appreciate it. I think I feel stronger and healthier and breathe better. And Mayo's done a wonderful job. My wife has done a great job as a caretaker, super job as a wife, mother, and my caretaker. And I thank every day the family who donated the lung. The young man who was killed in an accident. We haven't met. I don't know if we can, but I'm going to try to do that. Anyway, thank you for asking, Melissa. I know we've got a lot of issues to talk about, so have at it.
Yeah, sure. Well, glad to hear you're doing well. And yeah, certainly what you just described is a testament to the power of organ donation. And we've done quite a few segments on that over the years. Now, you mentioned coronavirus and how that's impacting health care. Numbers are ticking up again around the state and the country. We do have an ongoing mask mandate in Duval County that Mayor Lenny Curry has extended. You have a lot on your plate at City Council, but overhanging all of the issues remains the pandemic. And so how do you see this city continuing to deal with that?
Well, I think the mandate is an excellent move. I wish that governor would do the same, and certainly the president. You can't haphazardly address something that they've identified with the masks as being not necessarily the solution, but it's a very good preventative measure. The for those who aren't wearing the mask and those who are, for those who wear the mask, but also for those who could be exposed if you didn't have that mask on. You know, we've lost, 513 dead here in Jacksonville. We haven't done it since last March, at Panera's out in Mandarin, and our group, and the fourth person who died came from our round table, and I haven't even had a chance to grieve, but we haven't been back to that table, and I feel so bad. He went in with pneumonia, and a week later they told him he had coronavirus, and he passed away. So, and now four people later, it's about to 513. We've got to address it. Doesn't sound like it's going to get any better this fall. Florida's kind of, well, they're one of the, most of the states, they're just like the others. I mean, it's rising. We've kind of stabilized a little bit here, but we haven't done what we need to be doing. And, you know, I don't want to get into presidential politics. I've already endorsed Biden. I think he can make a big difference. But at least if he did something, he does more than what is going on right now. So it's a tough issue. But, you know, we're addressing the issues as we go. Hopefully, if the governor doesn't extend the mandate about Zooms, we will have our meetings downtown. And one of them, of course, will be the J Lot.
Let's talk about Lot J. By the way, an error in the top of the show: 16,429 deaths from COVID, 778,000 and change cases in Florida. We got that wrong off the top. So let's talk about Lot J. And I want to ask you about how the city council will exercise oversight over the taxpayer money that will go toward this project if it is successfully implemented. A growing number of constituents have expressed questions to you and your colleagues on the city council about whether this is an appropriate use of taxpayer money in this time we are living in. How should the city council exercise oversight?
Well, in the beginning, we've got to have a hearing on the bill. The bill was just filed. It was incomplete last council meeting, and I stopped it there, and I said when it's completed, they had the parking element left out. Our council auditor identified that, and so 2 weeks later, this Tuesday, tomorrow night, we'll be taking up for introduction is the J-Lot. And then we do have and I think I sent it to you as well as all the media, but we do have a good timeline. I want the public to know that we are not going to stop until we've exhausted every question and get every answer from the Jaguars and the developers and the administration, our council auditor, our general counsel. And we start off the next week with a council of the whole meeting, and it will be at 10 o'clock on Thursday. The following week, this is committee week. And we'll have a 4 or 5 hour meeting on that. The public's invited for that as well. And then the following week, we'll have a public hearing at our council meeting. And then the following week after that will be another committee week that we'll have another council at the whole meeting again at 5 o'clock so that those who are working can come down if they can't come in the morning time, which many can't. So we're not going to stop our hearing and our due diligence and our transparency. That's the key for this whole thing, is transparency, of course, for any project that we do. But we're not going to treat this, even though it's probably one of the biggest projects we've had, we're not going to treat it any different, whether it's Mr. Kahn or John Doe. They're generally all millionaires or billionaires that do these developments. But we're going to give it the same due diligence that we would expect every development to get. And I think that whether they voted out or in, they're going to have that chance at the conclusion, and hopefully it'll be in a month or two that we'll have our answers. And, if we ask the questions and get the answers, if we need to get a third party in, I think I'll let the council decide that. But I've got a pretty good timeline. I co-introduced it with the mayor as a courtesy as council president. I support the concept, but we've got to answer to us not ending up holding the, ended up them getting the uranium mine and we get the shaft. That's not going to happen. We need to be held harmless. That's an important question that we need to talk about.
And let me just say, jump in and say, we're speaking right now with Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri. It's 549-2937. What are your questions about the Lot J deal and other news and notes from the week? We'll go to your calls in a moment. Lots of comments on our Facebook page for you, President Hazouri. Here's one from Johan. How can a project of this undertaking get this far to City Hall and not have a legitimate feasibility study to go along with it, he asks.
Well, I think what he's addressing is that the feasibility study was done by the developer or whoever he appointed. At least that's what I've read. If that comes to fruition, that we need to a point where we need to get to an outside person, you know, I'm not interested in spending a lot of money to doing that, but if that's what it takes, then the council will have to decide that that's the direction they want to go, a third party. And I am supportive of that if that's what the council wants to do. But let me say this. I think our council auditor, Kim Taylor and her staff, will do an outstanding job. And I'm going to give them the opportunity to do their due diligence. They're the ones that identified that we didn't have the parking lot element prepared and ready to complete the bill 2 weeks ago. They're the ones that discovered, along with the general counsel, the PUP money for the JEA that stopped the sale of the JEA in its tracks. So they have the ability to do a thorough study. And in talking to the other cities that have already done this, where they are, what they expected, what their contract looked like, and we're going to go over this contract with a fine-tooth comb. And I know that others on the council are going to do the same. Some of them may have already made up their minds. That's, you know, their privilege. But I'm not yet ready for prime time. And so, you know, I don't want a deal breaker in there. But we can't be held. We've got to be held harmless and can't be. If he decides to leave, I hope he doesn't. He says he's not. And take the team with him. I don't want to be left managing a shopping center or entertainment center.
Well, isn't that part of the part of the equation here? That you and your colleagues on the city council are you being held hostage in a sense by this threat that if Shahd Khan doesn't get what he wants from the city, that he could just take his toys and go, you know, take the team and go, and then you'd be known as the local officials that oversaw the exodus of the Jacksonville Jaguars. How much is that dynamic playing into these negotiations?
Well, for me, and I can't speak for the council, obviously, it doesn't play. It doesn't play in Peoria, as they would say. I think that Mr. Khan has been very fair. Yes, he wants a partner, and that's the way he operates. Everything he does is with partnership. He's done a lot for this city. He's a different person than Mr. Weaver. Mr. Weaver lives here. He's philanthropic. And he does a lot for education, for women's issues, et cetera, et cetera. He and Mrs. Weaver. Mr. Khan does a lot of volunteer stuff and donating money and programs. And I think that for especially the minority community, and I trust him, but I have to trust and make sure that what he's doing, I want to see a good deal out of here, whether he leaves or not. If he does leave, you say we'd be accused of losing the Jaguars. I think the Jaguars plays a very important part in the area of creating a next downtown, which is the next great neighborhood, quite frankly, from where it is today to the end of Bay Street. I think the museum moving down to the shipyards is another great, great, great move to enhance anybody's effort on that end of the Bay Street. So I think by them doing that, it adds a lot more credibility to what we're trying to do. I wish you could afford to do, they could do the waterfront first, but they've got to have people downtown, and certainly his project at J-Lot is going to include
and and I just want to jump in and say, when we talk about Lot J, people that have driven downtown lately know that the city took down the off-ramps coming off the Hart Bridge that go by TIA Bankfield. They also go by our building at WJCT. For weeks and weeks now, there has been construction work going on outside our building. It sometimes means that we lose internet access because they accidentally cut a cable. I'm being informed right now that we cannot get people on the phone, and I am not getting your emails and tweets and Facebook comments because we have lost Wi-Fi as we speak right now with Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri. Tommy, the irony is it's probably because of this work going on right outside our doors that is tied to the Lot J project. So if you've been trying to call us or email or tweet us, we can't see it. And so that gives you a sense of where we are with this and how it's impacting our operations at WJCT. So we'll try to muddle through. But I want to ask you, if I could, about a couple of other matters, including some forums coming up about race and community policing. These are you're in charge of one called Safer Together. These are workshops that came from a September City Council meeting when your colleague Garrett Dennis proposed a budget amendment that would have frozen half of the JSO's $484 million budget. He said it's not an effort to defund the police. However, it didn't pass the council. At the same time, you are overseeing some workshops that will cover community policing, how we fund prevention, crime prevention programs, diversionary programs aimed at preventing crime. And so I want to get your thoughts about this because, of course, like every other city across the country over the summer, Black Lives Matter protesters raised their voices in Jacksonville to talk about issues of systemic racism and policing.
Well, let me tell you, I promised Garrett, Councilman Dennis, well, not just a promise, I told him that, you know, it wasn't going to pass. People look at it as defunding the police. That's not what we were doing. That's not what he was trying to do, and that's not what we're going to do with this workshop. That's not even a consideration in our discussion, so I need to make that clear. It may very well come up, but that's not the topics that we're going to concentrate on. Let me tell you, I told them that we would have workshops. It's going to start in January. I've appointed Michael Boylan and Joyce Morgan. They're very even-keeled, Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. They will be facilitators, not co-chairs, of putting together meetings that, in the neighborhoods and doing outreach and bringing the sheriff in, bringing other experts in to talk about the various and sundry issues that you just mentioned, from the budget to diversionary programs, the JSO's hiring and recruitment practices. And we're not here to do a witch hunt. We're here to cooperate, and we want to see, you know, too many people feel like they're more threatened than protected, and some of that may be true to some, but we need to make sure that there's an understanding that we have to have. We can't have a communication gap between the sheriff's office and the public. And right now, apparently, there's a big gap that we, it's a credibility gap, quite frankly, that we have to resolve. And I'm looking forward to this. Let me mention, too, and we know that there are a lot of issues, no telling what's going to happen after the election, one way or the other. And I think they're worried about that across the country. But we're going to deal with it, and we're going to do what should have been done a long time ago, not just perfunctorily going out there and just said, we're having workshops on it. They're going to bring back, much like what Councilman Boylan did with the JEA, we're going to get all recommendations, policy changes, and or recommendations at least, and any legislation we need to do will come out of this. They've got until June 30th to finish, but no telling, it may be shorter than that, but they're going to do a thorough workshop travel, and I'm looking forward to listening to them, and I couldn't ask for two better people to facilitate these meetings. Let me mention, can I, if you don't mind, I don't want to go into, but we have put together, as president, but with the council, our SIC committee, which is investigating the JEA, and should wind up by December 31st or the end of November. The social justice, and which is, I think, will be legendary for this city and this city council, social justice and community investment. I've also appointed a reapportionment committee and our Safer Together committee, a Lot J. And I think that these committees, I don't like special committees per se. Some of them will wind down this year. Others we need to move forward on. But I think we'll get not just progress, but results. And that's what I want. And then when Sam Newby, if he wins the presidency, he'll continue some of these if they're incomplete. I'm excited about what we're doing. It's important that we fulfill the promises and the unkept promises that, especially through social justice and community investment and our Safer Together Committee, that have been left behind all these years. So I'm excited about what we're doing. We're doing it as a legislative body, not executive, and we're moving forward. And it's and we've been doing this since my transplant. I did it before. It was 3 months. Actually, yesterday was my 3-month anniversary for the transplant. But I hit the ground running as soon as the month was over, the first month. And I'm excited about what we're doing, and we have a great relationship, the council leadership, and addressing all these issues.
So. You are certainly dealing with a lot of moving parts. Before we let you go, let me ask you as well about the Jacksonville City Council's investigation into last year's failed attempt to sell off JEA. You've given this committee a deadline of December 31st to continue looking at that whole controversy. What is your hope coming out of this committee?
Well, I have Steve Busey, who's the outside counsel, our own general counsel, and the committee itself. I will be on it officially after Scott Wilson has to leave as a result of his recent election or non-election. But I was at the meeting this morning. They met this morning at 8 o'clock. They've got their act together. Right now, the subpoenas issue is out there. They pretty much already to present a report. Steve Busey, the outside counsel, has been giving us monthly or quarterly reports, or monthly reports, really. And I think that what's going to come out of it, and it's, you know, we can't find people, we can't send them to jail or send them to, you know, to whatever. Ours is basically ethics and recommendations for changes. A number of those changes are being made already in the JEA bill that Mr. Borland chaired, and with all the, and a lot of recommendations, and that will be voted on, I think, December the 8th, whatever the last meeting is, and for this year for the council. But also, anything that comes out, any recommendations that come out of the SIC committee will be added to, or in addition to, as a separate bill, but probably be combined with it in amendments. Their recommendation, the SIC committee's recommendations, that can be added to further protect Jacksonville from having to deal with issues like they had to deal with last year. That was an atrocity that that should never have happened. And you know, on the ballot this year is allowing the city council president, or not the, well, the council really, but it says president, to appoint 4 members of the JEA board, and the mayor doing 3. I hope it passes, but more importantly, it was a bad lesson for us to have to learn this past time. You know, when I was mayor, we made the appointments. But, you know, the Rules Committee interviews these people. They'll do a better job. All of us will do a better job in any interview that we have for any boards. I think that taught us a pretty big lesson. So I think the SIC Committee will come forward with some great recommendations. They've done a thorough job. I mean, 600,000, I think, documents that Steve Busey looked at. I think Jason Gabriel, our general counsel, has done 1,000 or so that he had to do. It has been exhaustive for them, but very, very, very productive. And I think that, again, I think the committee, prior to me even being on it, of course, that has done a thorough job in working with Steve, working with the interviews that they have. Right now, we're waiting on the see if there's any response to the subpoenas that were issued last week, and we'll go from there. If they don't, if they challenge him or don't appear, there'll be others who are interviewed anyway that didn't get subpoenaed. If they don't show up, then the Rules Committee will have to decide whether to pursue it. And if they do, it goes to the City Council for a vote, and so we'll see what happens with that.
We'll see what happens.
You know, I'm not...
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, so much ground to cover. I'm glad we were able to get a lot of this over the air this morning. And I do apologize to all of the listeners that wanted to connect with you by phone or on social media. As I mentioned, it looks like the construction work outside our building that has been going on for some time now related to the Lot J development has cut our Wi-Fi. Once again, this has happened to us several times in the last few months. So
I'll check on that, too. Can I say something really quick? You didn't address the canvassing board. I've been working with the general counsel. He's been working with Mike Hogan and others. Hopefully they're meeting this morning.
Okay.
But, you know, lack of transparency bothered me when I read it in the paper. I called Jason Gabriel immediately, our general counsel. He's looked into it. He's talked to Jason Teal, the counselor of record for us and also for the canvassing board. They're going to look at trying to make some changes, and I think they can, as long as it doesn't jeopardize
your understanding that they will open up the Duval County canvassing board to a live video stream or some kind of video stream?
I can't commit them until they vote, but I think they're going to come up with something on streaming that they are capable of doing, a streaming angle where you don't see the names per se, but, you know, they have to allow the public to know what's going on. And these are tough times. You know, I appointed, from my standpoint, Joyce Morgan is the alternate and Michael Borlin. Yes, they're all Republicans on there. Michael was the only one that had been trained, and they needed somebody that was trained already. He was the only one. And you can't have anyone from council who's endorsed any candidate. So those are two fine people. And but, yes, I think something positive will come out today. Just cross our fingers. Shame on them if they don't. They should know better. They should know that transparency at any time is the most important thing for the public to see. And I hope that will come to fruition this morning and their decisions on how they're going to address further when they start. You know, we can't, you know, it's one thing to count votes. The other is discounting. And that's an important topic.
It certainly is with 1 week to go until Election Day. And I'm so glad that you updated us on that, because we are following that story, too. So thanks for that.
Yes, I know.
And thank you so much, Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri, with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, audience.
Well, much more still ahead later. Speaking of voting, find out how the Jacksonville Jaguars are working to increase your access to the polls. That's coming up, but up next.
We've set up what's called an Upskill Institute, a framework that not only allows for nurse practitioners to access these types of credentials, but also other types of skill sets from other areas in our industry in Jacksonville.
JU partners up with Availity, joining forces to expand healthcare access in Florida. We'll explain next. Well, the Jacksonville-based firm Availity is the nation's largest real-time health information network, and they've announced a new partnership with Jacksonville University. What it will do is expand access to primary care for millions of Florida residents. I learned more as I spoke with JU Provost Dr. Christine Sapienza and Molly Miles, executive with Availity. Take a listen. Dr. Sapienza, let's begin with you. Tell us about this collaboration with Availity and what it means for healthcare here on the First Coast and Florida.
Well, thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having me on today. It's a very important collaboration because it was in early spring of 2020 that Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill that passed, you know, very positively with the Florida House to allow nurses to independently operate as primary care practitioners without the supervision of a physician, without a physician oversight. So this partnership with Availity, where we're actually collaborating together to provide the coursework for advanced practitioners to now qualify to practice under this HB 607 passing, is really going to fulfill a necessity with regard to healthcare shortage.
Yeah. Molly, could you tell us more about that? It's my understanding Florida has one of the biggest shortages of primary healthcare professionals in America. We've got an aging patient population, a pandemic,
lots of physicians are retiring or just leaving medicine. So that's not a good mix of factors in Florida for healthcare, right?
Certainly not, Melissa, especially when you consider what the population of Florida looks like, right? We have a lot of retirees. We have a lot of our aging population also has a number of comorbidities. So people who not only need healthcare, but need it frequently, right, to manage their chronic conditions, for example, if they can't get into a primary care provider, that actually is not only just bad for them, it's bad for the whole healthcare system. Because then they'll end up, for example, in the emergency room, which is the most expensive place both for them to go and for the healthcare system for them to go. So everyone loses if we don't have enough primary care providers available.
So with this new fund at JU, it will be called the Availity Nurse Practitioner Scholars Fund. Tell us, Dr. Sapienza, how students will be able to access this curriculum and then get right out there into the workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. So it really is already for practicing nurses. So the students inside of Jacksonville University, as you know, Melissa, you know, traditional degree granting institution that we are, but now as we move to more comprehensive education, this is actually targeting working professionals. So these are nurses already out in the field, mm-hmm. and because of this passing of HB 607, they have to have 45 continuing education units in what's called advanced diagnostics and pharmacology. So with Availity's help, we've set up what's called an Upskill Institute, which is going to be a framework that not only allows for nurse practitioners to access these types of credentials, but also other types of skill sets from other areas in our industry in Jacksonville. So it's already set up to go. The scholars program is available. The nurse practitioners will sign up through these courses through our campusce.net/Jacksonville. They'll be given a scholarship code, and because of Availity support, they're actually going to be advancing themselves for free through the scholarship and be able to then be autonomous providers.
Wow. And Molly, this is in your wheelhouse at Availity. You are headquartered here in Jacksonville, but a big national health information network. So how does this alliance with JU meet your agenda as a healthcare company in this city?
Sure. So it's our mission at Availity to be the place where healthcare connects. So it's where payers and providers go to get answers so that they can provide the best care for their patients. So from our vantage point, knowing that we had this provider shortage and we didn't have if people couldn't connect about the right things at the right place, we didn't have enough people to connect, we couldn't solve the problem. So we stepped away a little bit from what we typically do and thought this, being a big philanthropic company, philanthropy is part of our DNA at Availity, we thought it just makes sense to reach out to JU, who's a great educator here in the area and has a renowned healthcare sciences school and nursing school. And they're also innovators. We consider ourselves innovators as well. So the partnership was just really obvious, I think, to all of us. And it made sense to invest in this way. And it made sense to partner with JU.
Yeah. And Dr. Sapienza, as you said, you want nurses to be aware of this opportunity right now. Time really is of the essence. We need more trained healthcare professionals to deal with the crisis we're all living through.
Yeah, you absolutely alluded to it. You described the perfect storm. You know, the need for, you know, increased use rates in the state of Florida, increased demand because of chronic and acute illnesses, part of that being COVID that's going on right now. And then, you know, the fact that, you know, Florida is a destination state for those who are retiring and aging. So every day, primary care physicians are retiring. We're going to have a 3,000 plus, you know, shortage of primary care physicians by 2025. And we've got, you know, 32,000 practicing what we call advanced practitioner nurses right now. So if we can give them access to these courses, they can complete these courses on their own pace. And then they apply for that certification to practice independently. We're going to hit the ground running. So absolutely, as soon as we can make this communication and move it forward, people can begin to educate themselves and be ready to serve.
Well, thank you both. Provost Dr. Chris Sapienza with us from JU, Molly Miles of Availity. And this is a new collaboration leading to the scholarship for this particular program of nurses. It's the Availity Nurse Practitioner Scholars Fund at Jacksonville University. So thank you both so much for sharing this with us.
Thanks so much for having us. And if you're a nurse practitioner out there, please go in and apply. We need you.
Well, students will get their chance this week to have their say about the closure of two local high schools brought on by the pandemic. These are teen influencers with I'm a Star Foundation as they host a live Zoom debate about reopening schools. You can watch and vote for the students, their age 13 to 18, as they debate and exchange ideas Thursday night on both Zoom and YouTube Live. The founder of I'm a Star is Executive Director Betty Burney. She's also a past chair of the Duval County School Board, and she's on the line. Betty Burney, good morning. Good to hear your voice.
Good morning, Melissa. It's also good to hear your voice.
And, you know, I'm a Star Foundation has done great things for youth in this city. As a past chair of the Duval County School Board, of course, you've hit on the timeliest of topics for this debate Thursday night with the kids, as Fletcher and DA high schools are both closed right now due to COVID. We'll get to hear what the students think about this, correct?
Yes, you will. You'll get to hear their pros and cons on whether or not schools should be open in the midst of a pandemic.
And what are the kids saying to you about this?
Well, I'll tell you, it's just been such an interesting mix because this debate topic, they've been, you know, working on their debate long before things happened with the two schools that you mentioned. And it's just some of the kids, I had one young lady who said to me, Mrs. Burney, I simply cannot be pro on this. You know, we just kind of randomly said you're pro, you're con. She said, I just simply cannot. It just goes against everything. And I'm so afraid. Mm. And so we have some who are afraid. We have some who are saying, you know, we must go in, and as long as we take the precautionary measures and the school takes the precautionary measures, we can do it. So it's been a lively conversation, and neither group knows what the other is going to say. But I will tell you this, I've never seen them research things more
than I
have on this.
This isn't your typical debate topic for a high school debate society function, is it?
It is not. And the level of research just astounded me. I've sat in on both of the groups. We do everything on Zoom right now. So I've gone into the different breakout rooms, and kids are going everywhere finding research and coming back saying, well, this will lead to that. And the way that they're connecting things, Melissa, just really makes me feel good because we try to tell them that they are the next generation of America's leaders. And as leaders, you have to connect things. You have to make sure that you're seeing down the road of what can happen, and they're making connections and seeing down the road, and I'm really pleased with that.
And tell us a little bit more about your foundation and how you have worked to develop youth leaders in this community since you left your role with the school board.
Well, the I'm a Star Foundation is based on one premise, and that is our mission is to believe and empower young people to know that they are stars, smart, talented, and resilient students who are solution-oriented and destined to change the world. We also share with them that if you are a leader, the first thing that you have to do is serve. So they've been able to do several service projects, two namely. One, as you know, we've done a lot of work with the homeless student population where they've raised over $125,000 and given it to the Duval County Public School System to assist and provide resources to homeless students. The other is healthy living. They found out that their generation might not outlive their parents. And so they've been on this track of trying to get kids to be healthy. And we do our Let's Move Jacksonville events. They've gone to see the United States Surgeon General and things of that nature. So our thrust is to make them understand that the essence of leadership is service to mankind.
So how, with all of that said, how is this all going to go down Thursday night? Because this is something anyone can watch. You're going to stream this on a few places, correct? Tell us more.
Uh-huh. We're going to be on the Zoom platform, And we're also streaming on YouTube Live, which we have an I'm a Star Foundation page that they can go to youtube.com/I'm a Star Foundation. And the students will do the regular debating. You know, they will have their opening statement. They will bring their, each will bring 5 minutes of argument. Then each will bring 5 minutes of rebuttal. They will have their closing statements. And we're asking the viewing audience to vote, not to vote so much as to whether or not you would go back to school. This voting is also going to be a little bit different. Will you engage in conversation with, you know, young people? Will you engage in conversation with the school district, those kinds of things? But they will vote to say who won. And, of course, each side is already declaring victory, and we're just trying to tell them to wait. But this will be an opportunity for adults to hear what children are thinking.
Sure. And that, so if you vote for the who you think the winners are of the debate, what do they get? Bragging rights, extra credit?
They get bragging rights. They get bragging rights. And then we have a little trophy that we're going to give to them. They don't know that, but each one of the kids on the team will get a trophy.
That's great. You know, we had hoped to have one of the student debaters on with you this morning, but as I've been saying throughout the hour, we have had some technical issues today. But the kids are the stars, of course. This is a way to celebrate the students, which you've done such a fabulous job of for so many years. So this is all happening Thursday night at?
Thursday night at 6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Yes, tune in, YouTube Live. We'd love to see you there.
So check it out as the I'm a Star Foundation hosts a live debate about the reopening of schools in this pandemic. You are invited to watch and vote for the Star Debaters. Check it out 6 o'clock Thursday night on Zoom or YouTube Live. Just search I'm a Star Foundation. Of course, the executive director is Betty Burney, past chairwoman of the Duval County School Board. And, you know, with everything that's going on right now, I can guess you may be relieved you're not on the school board right now, Betty.
Yes, I am. I can say that 17,000 times. Yes, I am.
I have no doubt. So enjoy and have a great time with it. And I'm sure the kids will too. Thanks so much, Betty Burney, with us.
Thank you so much for all that you do, Melissa. Bye-bye.
Okay, a quick break. And in a moment, how you can vote early this week thanks to a new drop box set up by none other than the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll find out more in just a minute here on First Coast Connect. Don't go away.
You blink, you reach for that handful of chips, you scroll through social media, it's all happening on automatic pilot. When it comes to being well-informed, being more mindful of where you get your news can make a big difference in how you see the world. To get your information in context, to gain different perspectives, and to understand real issues, choose NPR as your go-to source for election news. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
Here on WJCT News 89.9.
This election, Latinos are the second biggest block of voters in the country. That's if you consider all Latinos one big block.
I assumed, well, Latinos all think like me. And I mean, we're conservative, mm-hmm. we're pro-life, you know, we're Catholic. But that's not the case at all. We're a pretty disparate group.
The power and diversity of the Latino vote. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Saturday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, award-winning chef Marcus Samuelson. Born in Ethiopia and raised by adopted parents in Sweden, he now lives in Harlem, where his restaurant, The Red Rooster, is a community landmark. His new book is part recipes and partly an appreciation of Black contributions to American food. It's called The Rise. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Former Housing Secretary Julian Castro joins us to talk about his work to end housing discrimination after President Trump overturned many of the Obama administration's efforts.
With housing, we know that where you live matters. and we want to make sure that nobody's destiny is determined by their zip code.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
To keep customers and staff safe, businesses are doing some upgrading. One of the big ones, HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. And oh, by the way, it's not cheap.
It can be really easy to accidentally move in a direction that ends up costing you a lot more money.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Ventilation costs and benefits in the age of coronavirus. That's next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 here on WJCT News 89.9.
The races for key Senate seats are tightening. In the first of two installments, we'll have the latest on where these fights are taking place and what's at stake. First up, Arizona, Montana, Iowa, and a blockbuster contest playing out across South Carolina. I'm Jen White. Those stories next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. The Jaguars are getting into the political arena this election. Starting today, you can drop off your ballot at an early vote drop box that has been set up just outside TIAA Bank Field. To learn more, I spoke with Julian Duncan. He's Chief Marketing Officer and Senior Vice President with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Good morning. So let's share the news as the Jacksonville Jaguars partner up with the Duval County Supervisor of Elections. You're setting up a vote-by-mail drop box right there outside TIAA Bank Field for the final week of early voting. How did the franchise decide to get involved in this?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, as much as we're the franchise and an entity, you know, we're people and citizens of the greater Jacksonville community first. And as such, we're mindful of everything that's going on in the world around us, whether it's COVID or racial injustice, or in this case, it's the coming election. And so, you know, given our platform and our influence in the city, you know, we believe firmly that we have a responsibility to actively participate in this process, this voting process, by encouraging, educating, enabling, and getting people excited to vote. You know, for us, you know, this drop-off piece is a culmination of work that started, you know, months and months ago, where we created a point of view and a call to arms. Hopefully, you and others have seen it. It's get in the game, a rally cry that's inspiring everybody to get out and first and foremost to get registered, now to build a plan, and then ultimately to go vote. Got our players involved. We pushed out tons of content and communication through social and digital. And of course, like you already alluded to, worked with local leaders in the Supervisory Elections Committee to determine what the needs were, right? Initially, we were thinking about creating a ballot, a voting registration, sorry, a voting center here at the stadium, but the Supervisory Elections informed us that that wasn't really the need, and that the need was actually creating a ballot drop-off, given the number of increased ballots that have been requested by mail this year. So we jumped right on that opportunity to do our part in this in this voting effort, and we're excited to be a part of this this incredible moment for our community.
Right, and so this ballot drop box will be live from today through the end of the early voting period this coming weekend. People, when they come to Lot J, which is just on the left side there of TIAA Bank mm-hmm. Field, will it be obvious where the ballot drop box is?
Absolutely. The way that we liken it is to, you know, when you go through the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A, how they uh-huh. have the lines, multiple lines set up and, excuse me, tents and people outside to guide you and help you. It'll be, hopefully it'll feel familiar, right? So we'll have a similar setup. We'll have lanes and signage that will guide people to their destination. And there will be manned drop-off boxes in the parking lot for folks to come up and drive up and drop them off. And although there will be attendants in the parking lot, everything will be COVID-friendly. You know, social distancing and physical distancing measures will be taken into consideration. So there's no worry on that front. Folks will just be able to drive up, roll down their windows, drop off the ballot, and drive off secure in the knowledge that they have that their votes have been submitted and will count.
And, you know, with the NBA opening some of its arenas up for early voting centers, we're seeing pro sports really play an active role in the political process this year. This is something that has been building for a while in this country as NFL players have gotten involved in the Black Lives Matter movement and social justice movement around the nation. So how do you see this fitting into that activism?
Yeah, you know, kind of alluded to it a little earlier, but you know, we're humans first. You know, everyone that works within, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise or any franchise across all of sport, you know, we're humans first and foremost. And things such as racial injustice or social justice, however you decide you determine to call it, voting, COVID-19, all the things that we've kind of been confronted with this here in 2020, it affects us all. And oftentimes, I think players or people that work at franchises, sometimes it maybe seems like they're a bit removed from some of these things because they can run really fast or jump really high or catch really good. But, you know, it's always important to remember that we're people, too. And as these things affect the world and our communities at large, we're affected. And we understand that we have a platform. An influence and an opportunity to drive and effect change and drive and effect awareness and activism. And, you know, we partner with our players and we listen to our players. We listen to our fans in the community. And after we listen, we take a moment to think about what it is that we need to do, and then we take action. And so we're excited to be a part of this voting process. And it's the right thing for us to do. We're excited to be a part of it.
Go to jaguars.com/vote or just go drop off your ballot at Lot J starting today at TIAA Bank Field. And thank you, Julian. He's Julian Duncan, Chief Marketing Officer, Senior Vice President with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Julian, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Get out and vote, everybody. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. And Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any part of today's show, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 or our podcast up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.